Hey, this is Melina. Calling in on this new audio boo thing that I'm just trying out. So we'll see how it goes. I did a test, and hopefully this will work. So I'm taking a little break from work, digging my head out of everyone else's ass, and parsing the kink sites that I work on to answer some questions. I had a someone named Jackie, J-A-K-I, on FetLife, FetLife.com, F-E-T-L-I-F-E, and if you're not a member, you should be, because it's an awesome site, write to ask me about race play, which, for those who maybe aren't familiar with it, I loosely define as any type of play in BDSM that involves issues of your race or cultural identity or nation of origin. Used in the course of a scene expressly. And the obvious example for folks living in the United States would be black and white race relations is a long and pretty terrible history we've got here going on. But we don't have a handle. We don't have a lock, rather, on oppression and racism. And so obviously this applies to people of many different backgrounds. And you can see links on the on a post, and I'll link from here to where I've talked about it, and just lots of other places. Unintentionally, sort of become the poster child for it, mostly because so many people don't want to talk about it, and I not have been forced to, but I've sort of forced myself to do so because things that make me uncomfortable are the things that I often seek out. So you can read, and I suggest that you do, Jackie's full email, because I'm sitting here with it in front of me, in an attempt to try to go through it and see how I can respond. First of all, thank you for the questions. I'm honored to be able to talk to you about it. The first question that Jackie addresses, and I quote, race play is different because if you let that person in, can you ever really know they aren't actually racist? Is there a white person that you can let close enough to you to actually believe that they can say these things so freely while you play and then respect you afterwards? That answer, my personal answer, and again, I don't feel like I should have to give the fucking caveat, but obviously these are my experiences and my opinions, right? You don't know. And anyone who's seen me talk about this in person knows that I stress this. Part of what is risky about BDSM is that you can't ever really know what anyone's thinking. No one ever really knows. And sometimes you can't be honest enough with yourself. If you are doing a type of play that involves something that's amazingly humiliating to you, and part of you believes that you are this worthless piece of shit, but part of you hopefully holds on to your value and your worth, and that's what pulls you back out of the scene. At the end, and that's what brings you back to the person who's been your tormentor. And as a top, hopefully what you're seeing is beyond the verbiage and the language and the abuse to the soul of the person underneath, and you're really connecting with that. And in these scenes, however, where you're doing something that calls upon a collective subconscious, and that might sound a little bit woo, but I firmly believe that energy continues to exist based on what people have done before. It's past you. It's beyond you. It's bigger than you. There's no time that I do any sort of play that involves race that I'm not fully cognizant, aware, and in the stream of what has gone before me. And it's terrifying, and it's very dangerous, and that's why I do it. Is there a risk that the person you're playing with actually believes what they're saying? Absolutely. And if they didn't, it would not make the scene so strong and so brutal and such a force to be reckoned with. I think to ignore the fact that we all have these dark sides to us is to do a disservice to your humanity and to the reality and the strength of what BDSM can be for you. There's no point where I'm thinking, oh, they absolutely have no racist blood vessel in their body. Of course, that ugliness is there. We've all had those moments where you've looked at someone and judged them because of their appearance, or had a stereotype spring to mind at a quote-unquote inappropriate place. It's part of being human. If you have the balls or the ovaries to embrace that in your play and say, yes, this is ugly, and yes, it scares me, but I'm going to do it because I want to see what that ugliness takes me to, that's where I really draw my strength from it. Jackie goes on then to mention a really awesome analogy of sort of a racism being this tiny larvae curled up in the stomach of each of us, and anytime they do or say something racist, it gets a little bigger. And then, and I quote, people treat race play like you'll be in the middle of a scene and some alien will burst out of their stomach and devour you, you know. And I love that analogy because, A, it's so visceral, obviously, but also because it really is true. There's always that fear. But that's true with any SM. I've at least three times I can count of that I distinctly remember been in a scene with someone and looked them in the eye and thought, I don't know if I'm safe anymore. And I found that impossibly erotic and exciting because you take a risk every time you wake up and inhale. That's risk. You take a risk when you take a shower, when you cross the street, when you share your feelings with someone, when you drink a glass of water. To consciously take a risk then is even more beautiful because it's so organic to our lives, you know. I think risk is so amazing. And to for someone to honor me by letting me see their ugliest, darkest, most terrible feelings and thoughts and let them express even a piece of that on me is also an honor. I could easily take away that hatred that they show me and say, God, you know, that person's really a fucking douchebag and talk shit because it's true. But outside of the fact that they are a douchebag, they're functioning in society, hopefully. Well, everyone I play with still is, as far as I know. No one's been jailed yet. that is an amazing thing to see. And that comes to the fore, again, when you're doing this type of play. Would someone who is otherwise a pretty stable person with, of course, those little maggots and nuggets of racism and hatred that we all have suddenly turn on you and reveal all that in its horrible glory? Unlikely. It's possible. But it's like any other risk that you take. When you do bondage, you're risking nerve damage. You're risking falling and getting a concussion. There's so much risk that you take. And there's emotional risk, too. And this is part of that. Let's see. Further on, Jackie asks how I can talk about this sort of topic so freely. It's because of my perverse nature. There's something in me that makes me feel as though if there's something that's afraid, something of which I'm afraid, something that terrifies me, something that angers people. Such a strong emotion, you know, and the whole thin line between love and hate thing is really fucking true, yeah. So my thinking is that if there's something that ignites such a knee-jerk, visceral response in so many people, or fear, or hatred, and fascination, it has to be talked about, and I feel compelled to do so. Especially because no one else is doing it for me. If I don't have anywhere to go to drink at that fountain, I've got to, you know, start digging and get that wellspring going myself. Aside from Vi Johnson, there was no one else who I'd read writing about it, and certainly no other black people. A couple of times I've seen classes. Midori did a class, I think, the same time that I did, actually, at the Folsom Fringe, dealing a bit with cultural issues in playing with BDSM. And Mike Bond did a class in New York that caused a big ruckus. Of course, the title of the class was part of the problem, because the title of the class was Nigger Play, Free at Last, because specifically that's a play he does. He wasn't teaching about anything beyond the black-white paradigm in, you know, coming from an African-American standpoint. And of course, the use of the word nigger is going to be inflammatory. Aside from those examples, there's not very many other people of whom I'm aware. And if you know of folks, let me know. I'd love to talk to them, who are public about it. And so rather than just grumble that no one else is doing it, I decided to do it, you know. Jackie expresses that they have a partner, a white partner, male, who has been adequately educated and exposed to the history of racism, et cetera, et cetera. Again, read the full email for the full gist. Feeling that perhaps doing this type of play would erode his education in this, my feeling is no, absolutely not. First of all, if he's uncomfortable with it, obviously, just don't go there. Just don't, period. It's not something that you coerce or get someone into. It's not something you work your way up to. Like, I want to cane you, but I know you don't want to be caned, so let's just start with a hand spanking and work our way up with it. No, it's not like, I want to do race play with you, so let's just start with this little head bandana and you can scrub my floor, and then we'll work up to me pouring syrup on you and calling you my Aunt Jemima nigger bitch while you suck my cock. There's no sort of curve there. You know, you just have to either want to do it or not. And I understand the fear that Jackie talks about here. My thinking is this: if someone does have the grounding and the education and the respect and the knowledge of the full weight of what this is and still decides to do it, they're an even more well-equipped partner because they're not going to fuck around and take it lightly. They're going to know that they're stepping in a minefield and they're going to have more respect for it intrinsically. So my feeling is that actually someone who's educated and someone who's sensitive and someone who does it not out of reluctance but with a hesitation that's built on respect and fear of the play is a good person to play with. You don't want to play with someone who's doing knife play, who doesn't give a shit about knives, who's never been cut, who doesn't know what that feels like, okay? You want to do it with someone who knows exactly what it feels like, what the capacity of their weapon is. And if you are playing with race and racism and you don't know what the capacity of that weapon is, it can trigger, it can ruin relationships, it can destroy friendships, it can tear apart social circles, it can generate feelings of rage and anger and threatening behaviors. And these are all things I'm saying because I've been on the receiving end of it. I'm not pulling this out of my ass, folks, you know. Why, at the end, this sort of closing image that I'm presented with is just a huge wave of puzzlement. Why? Why would you do this? Why is this so much harder than other types of play that are equally dangerous, like incest or rape, fantasy? Why? Because it is. Because we all know these things. Not all of us have been victims of sexual abuse. Many have, and it's very tragic. So when we play these daddy girl or mommy boy games, it's for a lot of us, though it might be evocative of something in our past, for a lot of it it's make-believe and a lot of it is about empowerment. There are very few people who've experienced racism in real time who have gotten an erotic charge out of that in the true sense of the act of hatred and debasement. But in the same way that rape is an act of violence, not an act of sex or of love in any way, racism, as it's practiced by a racist, is not about an erotization. It's not about repossessing your power. It's about them removing it from you. And when I do play that involves race, it's about my pushing past that reality of racism in my life. It's about finding a way to be who I am wrong in it. And it's going, wow, I'm kind of fucked up. You're kind of fucked up. This whole situation. But at the end, all of us have discovered, say, deeper, is that it doesn't define all of us. It's not everything. It's not the be-all and end-all. Today, if someone comes up to me in the street and calls me a nigger, I look at them and my first thought is, really? Have you had a cup of coffee? Do you need a donut? Can I buy you a snack? Because maybe it's your blood sugar that's causing you to be such a fucking douchebag. You know, they don't have control over me anymore. And I'm not going to say it's cured my reaction towards it. I'm still as horrified by the racism and the anger and the terror and the fury that's been unleashed, especially in the United States, by the election of a black man to the highest office in this country. It's terrifying to me, the fact that people are edging closer towards public attitudes of hatred. Is very real. The fact I've done this type of play doesn't mean that that any importance it more. It means it pricks me deeper because I have felt what it feels like in a very shadowy ghost sort of echo of my ancestral ways to be on the receiving end of that amount of hate. And it's a reminder and it's always with me. It's not a shortcut. It's not for everyone and it's not easy, but it's so important to who I am that I can't let it go. So that's the why. And that's my talk for right now. I'm going to go get back to work, see if this posts. Thanks so much for listening. And if you have any other questions, feel free to post them on the blog. And if this works out, I might do more of these kind of phone things because it's a hell of a lot easier than typing. And if someone wants to do a transcript of this, oh my God, that'd be awesome. Let me know. You can contact me, mo@melina.com. Peace out.